Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Everyone, welcome to the show today. I'm filling in for Dr. James Fetzer. My name is Holly Seeliger, and I'm very happy to be helping Jim out today while he is doing some business, I'll just say. So I've got the first hour of the show lined up here, and then I'll do some calls here in the second hour, I believe. We'll put out the number. But I wanted to talk about some strange news of the week. We've got a couple of interesting articles that I wanted to share with everyone today. And we've got, first of all, I don't know if anyone in the audience has heard about the central bank digital cryptocurrencies that are being rolled out as we see massive inflation here in the United States. And we're seeing this globally. Obviously, this is part of the Great Reset program, and then they've got the central bank digital cryptocurrencies. So they've been experimenting with cryptos for a while. I'm sure you've heard about the different Bitcoins and Ethereum, and I believe there's tens of thousands of crypto coins at this point that people can invest in, quote unquote, right now. And there's been some debate over the years about, you know, whether it was an opportunity to get away from the central banks or not, if it was a way to get around the central bank institutions, global banking, if it was actually going to lead to liberation. So, like, let's say some people within like the Libertarian Party or whatnot have been supportive of cryptocurrencies because they thought it was a way to get around centralization. However, we see now with the rollout of the central bank digital cryptocurrencies, this can be a way for basically the central banks to usurp this supposed autonomy that these central bank, that these cryptos would have had. So that was always my concern, that through like privatization and running, having these test runs over the past decade or so, they've been able to put these coins out and to see how people will react to them, how they will interact within economies. They're rolling them out particularly within island nations. And I think because they're more of a closed economy, they can do these test runs and figure out how it's going to roll out. And using the AI technology and the new generational technology, I'll just say the new frequency technologies that are available that they need. So for the real-time tracking, of course, and this tied in with the social credit score. And there's been some debate recently over some cryptocurrencies claiming that they're FDIC-backed. So no, they're not. They can't claim to do so. There's nothing backing your investment in these cryptocurrencies. So we see several governments around the world, certain countries, starting to look into doing these test runs, which we knew would occur. They would eventually, central banks would, my thought was that they would do these test runs and then they would start to make this part of the norm. And as these national currencies, like let's say the US dollar and other currencies, start to collapse, as we are seeing right now with massive printing and inflation. And of course, inflation is just a cycle. It's part of the whole thing. They act like it's a big crisis, and they act, which it is a crisis for the individual, but it's part of a system that they use to control and basically seize assets and push larger populations into poverty. So we've got the nation of Colombia is now set to introduce central bank digital cryptocurrencies, according to the tax agency chief. This is according to Decrypt.co. Luis Carlos Reyes, director of the DIAN, told a magazine on Monday that the nation may create its own digital currency. So we see some nations in South America starting to roll out central bank digital cryptocurrencies. Luis Carlos Reyes, the director of Colombia's Tax and Customs Agency, the DIAN, told Cenima magazine Monday that South American nation's new government would look to create a digital currency that would make transactions easier for the consumer. I've also talked about the nation of Thailand is also looking to do a test run of central bank digital cryptocurrencies. The central bank digital cryptocurrency CBDC is a digital version of the state's fiat currency, like the US dollar or the euro, backed by a central bank. So, of course, we know central banks, private corporations, nothing particularly backing the US dollar at this point. We're not on a gold standard. So I will get into a little bit about that, if there could possibly be CBDCs that are backed by something tangible at some point. CBDC is a very different from Bitcoin. They're centralized, unlike cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. That means that a central power, the government or a private corporation, controls them. Privacy advocates have warned that they may allow the state to snoop on citizen spending, as well as easily exercise capital control. So, right, they could control, you know, where and when you spend it, and how much you spend, etc. Very similar to what we've seen with the, universal basic income, which they've rolled out in different nations over the past couple of years. I know Finland did a test run on universal basic income and ultimately decided to remove it because they felt like it was not, quote unquote, successful. Countries around the world are currently at different stages of researching and releasing CBDCs. Other than small Caribbean countries like the Bahamas, most major economies have not released one. So, yes, I've talked about this before. The Bahamas, Jamaica, I think they're calling it a shell coin is what they've colloquially called it in the Caribbean. And, of course, we know the Caribbean is a colony of the U.K., and so they're being test run and rolling out the CBDC. So they're trying to give phones, you know, smartphones to everyone down there, and then they can use cryptocurrencies down there. And probably, like I said, due to the fact that it is more of an enclosed economy as an island, Colombia is becoming increasingly crypto-friendly. Latin America's fourth largest economy last month released draft rules for crypto companies that would want to operate in the country. And its major banks have partnered with crypto agencies, including Binance, an experimental project which allows consumers to buy small amounts of digital assets like Bitcoin and Ethereum through largely traditional channels. So we also see Australia's central bank now launching digital cryptocurrency pilot. The Reserve Bank of Australia says that its year-long trial will explore innovative use cases and business models for currency using different business models as an important step in our research on CBDC, rolling it out in Australia. About 100 countries are now considering rolling out CBDCs. So obviously this is by design to put it all out at the same time. According to the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, which is basically bankrolling all of this, with a number of jurisdictions, including China and the Bahamas, already distributing their digital currencies among the public. So they claim it will allow for nascent technology for faster and cheaper financial transactions, promote financial inclusion, whatever that means, and give central banks greater flexibility in monetary policy. So there you go. So really nothing tangible backing it at that point is what they're saying. So cryptocurrencies operate on peer-to-peer networks known as blockchains, which are decentralized that no single person or group exerts control, according to Al Jazeera. While sharing some similarities with cryptocurrencies, CBDCs differ from digital tokens like Bitcoin, as they are controlled by a central authority, which is being rolled out by the IMF. So I did want to mention one other article that I saw this week talking about CBDCs. This is according to CryptoBriefing.com. Russia may introduce a targeted CBDC by 2023. So I know a lot of people probably know about this already, that Russia is moving towards a gold-backed ruble. So I thought this was pretty fascinating as well. Targeted or colored digital rubles could be designed to pay only for specific goods or services, says the Bank of Russia. The Bank of Russia announced in a report today the possibility of designing some digital rubles in a way that they could be used only for specific purchases. Central Bank expects a digital ruble to also increase the availability of financial services and optimize payments across borders. A Russian CBDC could be rolled out in 2023. It's indicated that the central bank digital cryptocurrency would allow targeted technology and increase efficiency of public spending, public procurement, and government contracts were specifically mentioned. So they could be paying for government contracts within the nation using CBDC. So I think it's interesting that they have first connected the ruble to the gold standard, and then from there they can create the digital ruble from then. The report comes on the heels of Russian President Vladimir Putin's decision to ban cryptocurrency payments. The Bank of Russia, however, stated that it wouldn't object to the use of cryptocurrencies in cross-border settlements following the nation's ban from SWIFT banking system. So that's the point that I wanted to make, that the United States removed Russia from SWIFT, but really, honestly, was just a nail in the coffin for the United States and for SWIFT, because SWIFT is an older program. It's been around since at least the 1980s. So it would say antiquated. And in this age of like instant payments, SWIFT just wasn't cutting it anymore. So using something like a CBDC for the cross-border payments, and they've been working more and more with China to build basically their own version of SWIFT, as we see BRICS and this different switching of U.S. financial institutions, everything kind of being switched from west to east that we're seeing right now. So as BRICS is continuing to expand and nations such as Russia are getting onto a gold standard, United States, we are falling behind because our monetary system is based on nothing tangible at this point. As you can see with inflation, value of US dollar is decreasing with the printing of money and nothing really being tied to it at this point. So I thought that was interesting that Russia was considering a digital ruble. They're saying it could be implemented an official banking rollout in the year of presidential elections in 2024. So they've got a couple of years where they want to start to roll it out slowly. They will start running beta testing, Bank of Russia, in 2023 of the digital ruble-based smart contracts for trades by limited circles of participants. So They debuted their first digital ruble trials in February 2022. They use major banking giants like Esper, SBER, VTB, Tinkoff Bank, and others within Russia. Putin urged the adoption of crypto regulation multiple times before Russia adopted its crypto law. So they've put extreme limits on it. Digital financial assets, which didn't change much as it still lacks in regulatory aspects like crypto mining, taxation, and others. So they're going to roll it out on a limited basis here in Russia. Meanwhile, this is according to news.bitcoin.com. Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe developed a roadmap for the adoption of CBDC. So this is pretty similar to what we've seen in other nations, like I'd mentioned before, Australia, Thailand, Colombia, the Bahamas. They've rolled out with the monetary policy statement from the IMF that, quote, the role of stakeholders in the CBDC journey is paramount in Zimbabwe as they start to roll this out. So, yeah, they've got to hook everyone up with the smartphones that they can be able to use it first and foremost. And then within the United States, we saw that President Biden put out his intention, if you will, to examine and research the feasibility of CBDCs. CBDC Weekly, this is according to payments.com, bipartisan push to speed up the Fed's digital dollar study. A bipartisan group of Congress is pushing for faster action on the digital dollar. So, of course, it would make sense that this would be two wings of the same bird. We've got people, Republicans and Democrats, who seem very excited about this concept of CBDCs for some reason, even though I have a feeling that their constituents probably aren't too interested in this. Representative Maxine Waters, Democrat from California. Representative French Hill, Republican from Arkansas, are among the House of Representative members who introduced a bill that would compel the Federal Reserve to speed up its work on CBDCs. So it's not enough that Biden put out an executive order to research CBDCs. We've now have Democrats and apparently rhinos, which are now in the House of Representatives, saying it's not fast enough. We need to get onto CBDC and basically UBI as fast as possible. So the Federal Reserve is not working fast enough for these two individuals. Waters chairs the House Financial Services Committee, which means that the bill will certainly get a hearing without getting bogged down. It will instruct the Fed to speed up its study of a digital dollar and begin building a process by which one can be created and launched. So Maxine Waters from California, I wouldn't be surprised if California is one of the first states to do like a beta test of CBDC in one of their big cities, like, oh, I don't know, San Francisco. I'm just going to throw that out there. Maybe San Francisco, maybe New York. Maybe some of these big liberal cities will want to do a CBDC UBI rollout like this and get everyone on their phones. I'm assuming it'll have to be in one of those fifth generation technology areas just to make it like instantaneous or whatever. While the U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell has shifted from skeptical to unhurried in the past couple years regarding CBDCs, the Fed just wrapped up a public comment period on its January report called Money and Payments, the U.S. Dollar in the Age of Digital Transformation. The comments were overwhelmingly negative, led by U.S. bank lobbying groups, which fear that they will cut out and lose access to depositors' funds. Having called CBDCs a new digital asset space race, Waters believes that it will, quote, that with countries around the world competing to deploy digital versions of their own currencies, and America will not be left behind. They're talking about the digital yuan, the ECNY, almost ready to launch. Virtually all others are years away. More than a few supporters in and out of Congress fear that Certain nations, including China, will be able to use its CBDC to challenge the dollar's position as the world's reserve currency. Well, we're already seeing that here. They can't blame that on CBDC. We're already seeing that with the gold-backed ruble at this point. We see the value of the ruble going up and U.S. dollar obviously decreasing tremendously. Also, as I had mentioned before, the Reserve Bank of Australia, the RBA, along with the country's treasury and other agencies, have announced plans to begin research issuing the CBDC. They'll be working with the Digital Finance Cooperative Research Center, a public-private research partnership. Don't you just love those? Studying the broader digitalization of assets with the Treasury Department, represented on the country's Studies Steering Committee. So, yes, we're going to see the United States and Australia are probably rolling this out pretty soon. Like I said, probably be some of these liberal states. I'm guessing some of the states which are low-key, quote-unquote, bankrupt at this point. So Illinois, California. California just came out. I believe it was the comptroller of California that recently announced that California is severely short on the amount of money needed to cover their budget, their proposed budget for next year. So the state of California is either going to have to cut their budget tremendously or raise taxes or acquire money some other way. I wouldn't be surprised if Newsom or some other representatives, since we already see Maxine Waters pushing this, we'll see people in California, representatives in California, wanting to push CBDC in California to try to cover for the fact that they are severely mismanaged, and they have been for decades. Even though California is what they say it's the seventh largest economy in the world, they can't cover their own expenses at this point. So something is severely wrong with California, mismanagement on purpose on multiple fronts here. So I would assume CBDC would be rolled out in California first, perhaps, like I said, Illinois or New York or one of these other super liberal and possibly bankrupt states. So they can continue to paper over that as well. So I wanted to talk about CBDCs there for just a minute because I feel like it's important that people understand what is going on here, because there are a lot of people who are confused about inflation and they don't really know what is going on. So either we're going to have to get back onto something that's tangible, or we have to have something that's backed, get back onto like a gold standard or something that's some sort of tangible, because we're just out of control right now with quote unquote printing. And I'll be getting some more into that with Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, which he just signed. It just passed through the House and the Senate, and Biden has just signed it. And I'll be getting more into that as well as we continue on our show today, because I think that's important. It's a big cover for what is going on. It's an opportunity to keep, quote unquote, printing money. And obviously, as you know, this isn't printed actual paper dollars. You might have noticed that a lot of businesses are no longer taking cash. And a lot of times they claim it's because, oh, cash is dirty, or we've got a cash shortage, or we've got a coin shortage. So therefore, they're, you know, card only. And I think a lot of this is just acclimating people to this concept of trying to move towards the digital money. And then they don't even have to, you know, print it. It just becomes a bunch of zeros on a computer screen, as we have seen. So we're seeing that more and more. Even though paper money is supposedly still legal tender, there are businesses out there which are saying that they are no longer taking cash. So I'll be getting more into that into a few minutes with inflation, what we're seeing with inflation, the Inflation Reduction Act, and inflation across the world right now. And then also just some strange news about AI And just because I think that that's an important tie-in to everything that we're seeing right now as we move into this digitalization. And I'll be taking calls in the second hour if people want to call in. And we can have a discussion about CBDC, about inflation, about the economy, or about the AI technology, the couple of news articles I will be sharing about that, or any other sort of comments or questions that you may have as I am covering Dr. James Fetzer and his radio show today. So thanks, everyone, for joining me. We have the break in just a minute here. So I did want to mention that Bill Gates is definitely behind. We're seeing news articles just straight up stating that he is behind a lot of the push for the Inflation Reduction Act, which I think is kind of interesting that the mainstream news is openly admitting that. So I will get into that a little bit. And then also about the investments that Gates and Warren Buffett from Berkshire Hathaway have been making some investments into nuclear technology recently, which I think is fascinating considering that we're moving to this green economy by hook or by crook. Here in the United States, you may have seen, I've seen locally a lot of solar panels going up, which seems kind of crazy to me, considering this is New England, and we have a lot of days which are not sunny, and we have a lot of snow cover here in New England, so not exactly sure how effective these solar panels are going to be, or how much electricity they're actually hoping to generate. I do know that they're getting a lot of federal money and private money to do so. There's also a lot of tax breaks in the state as well for individuals who businesses, mostly businesses, out-of-state businesses that want to come in, start building these solar panels. So lots of tax breaks, lots of incentives to do so. So there's a big push to try to put in these huge solar farms, is what they're calling them, around here. So I'm seeing a lot of clear cutting. I live in a forested area, and I've seen a lot of clear cutting to do that. So thanks, everyone. I will see you just a minute as we get back from the break.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
All right, everyone. So thanks for joining me again. My name is Holly Seeliger, and I'm filling in for Dr. James Fetzer today. I do have a YouTube and BitChute channel called Zoon Politicon. If you guys want to check out my other work, it's Zoon Politicon. It's from Plato talking about how man is a political animal. So I do a lot of news analysis. I get into strange news. I like to talk about, obviously, CBDC, interested in AI technology, but I do interviews. I try to put out videos pretty much every day, and I've been doing some commentary with Dr. Fetzer and others for about a year now. So I'm trying to stay on YouTube, but I don't put a lot of stuff up on there. But there's a pretty good chat. There's still a lot of people that are still on YouTube. So put some of the quote-unquote non-offensive stuff on YouTube as the algorithm and everything keeps constantly changing. And then I put pretty much everything else on, like BitChute, Rumble. I started putting videos up on Brighteon as well, a couple of other smaller platforms. So trying to stay busy that way, and really pleased to be on Revolution Radio today. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the Inflation Reduction Act, which is just another opportunity for Democrats and RINOs and whoever voted for it. Obviously, some Republicans must have been on board with it for it to go through, went through the House and the Senate, and then President Biden signed it today. So it was just another opportunity to print a bunch of U.S. dollars and invest in this, you know, green energy technology, which I highly recommend the book by Rosa Corey, who unfortunately passed away this past year, talking about the UN green agenda. She had been talking about it for like 15 years or so. She had started to see it in her home state of California and had been warning about this green agenda as part of like a UN control grid system. And we're seeing here with this Inflation Reduction Act, there's a lot of quote unquote green technology tied in with this, which I think is intimately involved with like the financial Great Reset. I usually look at a lot of this through an economic lens. So obviously they need to have all of this infrastructure in place, this new generation technology, frequency technology infrastructure in place in order to be able to have the real-time tracking and everything that's needed for these digital assets, digital cryptocurrencies to go forward. So they need to go full steam ahead with that sort of control grid. Biden signs the Inflation Reduction Act into law, setting a 15% minimum corporate tax rate. This is according to CNBC. President Joe Biden signed the Inflation Reduction Act into law. The new law passed with majority Democratic support in the Senate and the House. More than $430 billion package is expected to reduce the deficit by more than $300 billion over a decade. So let's do a little follow-up in the end of the decade, and let's take a look and see how quote unquote successful this actually is in reducing the deficit. So that's not even the debt, the national debt. They're just talking about deficit. Oh, goodness. After more than a year of debate over costs, taxes, tax credits, regulations, President Biden finally signed his sweeping tax, health, and climate bill into law, albeit a significantly reduced version of $1.75 trillion, part of that Build Back Better plan he was pushing for last year. So, of course, this is the Hegelian dialectic or ordo ab chao, where you've got the crisis, you've got the lockdowns, you've got the manufactured demolition of our economy and our infrastructure, particularly over the past couple of decades. I like to say, like, starting from NAFTA, basically, things became pretty obvious. The writing was on the wall. But obviously, as I had mentioned before, getting the U.S. dollar off the gold standard was a huge blow to financial security as part of the United States. And then with this Inflation Reduction Act and then Build Back Better, they can rebuild this as part of the new fourth industrial revolution that we're seeing, this green tech innovation. So the president signed the newly renamed Inflation Reduction Act into law, flanked by Chuck Schumer, of course, Joe Manchin, Jim Clyburn, and Kathy Castor. So I guess using the term Build Back Better wasn't as successful, so they had to rename it the Inflation Reduction Act by printing a bunch of money. Quote, with this law, the American people won and special interests lost, according to Biden. The new law makes a $369 billion U.S. dollar investment in climate and energy policies, $64 billion to extend a policy under the Affordable Care Act to reduce health insurance costs, and a 15% corporate tax minimum aimed at companies that earn more than $1 billion a year. They claim it's expected to raise $737 billion in revenue over the next decade. Roughly $124 billion U.S. dollars is expected to come from increased IRS enforcement. So I'm not even going to get into that because plenty of people have done a fantastic deep dive into that. But that's basically how they are going to pay for a lot of this, meaning tougher and more frequent audits for the wealthy, according to CNBC, is projected to reduce the deficit by more than $300 billion over a decade. To get the deal done, Biden had to give up some of his favorite pieces for the original Build Back Better. bill including universal child care and tax cuts for the middle class. Manchin, a conservative Democrat, who was also a late Democratic holdout until he and Schumer struck a deal moving the bill forward earlier this month. Kyrsten Sinema held up passage in the evenly divided Senate at the last minute over a provision that would have closed the so-called carried interest loophole that allows private equity managers and hedge fund executives to pay significantly lower taxes than most taxpayers, while introducing the President Chuck Schumer, thanked Manchin along the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the White House staff who gave it their all, quote, to finish this bill. It passed the Senate 51-50 with no Republican votes. Vice President Kamala Harris cast a tie-breaking vote, giving Democrats a win. U.S. House passed the bill on Friday in a 220-207 margin. According to Biden, quote, let's be clear, this is a historic moment. Democrats sided with the American people, and every single Republican in Congress sided with a special interest, every single one. So the Inflation Reduction Act, four ways it will kick in right away. This is according to Yahoo Finance, talking about tax credits around energy and Americans' homes, a 30% tax credit for installing energy-efficient windows, heat pumps, or newer models of appliances. A second tax credit encourages people to install solar panels on their roofs. The bill will include $14,000 in rebates to consumers that they can use when buying heat pumps or other energy-efficient home prices. I'm assuming this is all smart meter type stuff, or the smart technology that we see being installed in people's homes. The new appliances will also help families save on energy bills. So we've seen this. I've talked about this before with like the smart energy sort of HVAC systems that will set your heat or the temperature in your home depending on what the energy allotment is in your area, etc. So we had seen this in, for instance, Texas, where people had like these smart home automatic temperature gauges installed in their homes, and they were trying to turn the temperature down so they could cool their house, and it was basically locked through the smart technology. They were like, okay, it was set at 75 or something like that, and they couldn't set it at any lower because it was quote unquote during peak hours or something like that, or even losing that temperature gauge during certain hours due to peak hours. So they're talking about also tax credits for electric vehicles. The credits are worth up to $7,500 for new electric vehicles and $4,000 for used electric vehicles. So what's the average cost of an electric vehicle right now? Like $40,000? I don't know. I'm going off the top of my head because I've seen just regular cars right now going for, I think I saw a used truck that was like at least 10 years old going for like $30,000 around here locally. So, and I think a lot of this has to be tied in with like the cash for clunkers that we saw, the tax credit thing that started up, I think like 10 years or so ago, which basically got rid of the used car market here in the United States. A lot of people don't realize that cash for clunkers basically got rid of all the used vehicles. And so the used car market has kind of crashed in a lot of ways because the used vehicles are just not out there. There aren't enough vehicles out there at this point. So that's why we're seeing the prices of used vehicles going up tremendously despite inflation. So basically, if you gave up your car for that cash for clunkers, that could have been sold to someone who needed a used vehicle. And so that's why we're seeing people like Pete Buttigieg and other people in the U.S. government saying, oh, well, you can't afford a car or gas is too high, etc. Just buy an electric vehicle. Here, buy a brand new one and we'll give you a $7,500 rebate for your new vehicle, or $4,000 if you buy a used one. So Many vehicles that are currently get the credit will now be left out. Some health care provisions of the bill will also go into effect soon. Medicare Part D, they're putting a cap on out-of-pocket drug costs. So I know people are talking about this, the insulin. I remember under the Trump administration, he actually, I believe it was an executive order or something like that, he put in a cap on the price of insulin, because insulin, I believe, has been around since like the 80s or 90s and shouldn't be so expensive. So under the Biden administration, he removed that executive order, I believe, and then now he's kind of put it in under this new Inflation Reduction Act, where the bill would limit insulin payments to $35 a month starting in 2023. So for basically the next year, people are still screwed if you're trying to get, pardon my language, if you're trying to get insulin. It will then cap all out-of-pocket drug costs to about $4,000 annually in 2024 and lower that cap by a further $2,000 by 2025. It will directly benefit 1.4 million beneficiaries each year, according to the White House, which, I don't know, 1.4 million, we're talking about majority of people in the United States are on some sort of prescription drug at this point. That's not really a whole lot of people. Biden called out the provisions recently as just one specific example of the bill's quick impact. The 2010 Affordable Care Act also included provisions to help certain Americans with a subsidy for their health insurance costs that were scheduled to be end this fall. They'll be extended for 3 years at a cost of $64 billion. Also, there's oil drilling provisions with this. Basically, it's Build Back Better program, but Inflation Reduction Act that Biden signed in. Changes to oil drilling regulations backed by traditional energy producers will also go into effect right away. Through Biden and his aides might not tout these energy-friendly provisions to their Democratic base. These provisions may spur greater oil production, open new areas to drilling, and incentivize carbon capture technology. So yes, we see the slow move. We're going to see the slow move to carbon credits. Hopefully not, but I know there's a lot of talk about moving towards carbon credits. In total, the bill is not expected to have a sizable impact on inflation. So this is Yahoo Finance admitting this. So this is the Inflation Reduction Act openly admitting that the bill is, quote, not expected to have a sizable impact on inflation. The Penn Wharton budget model recently predicted that the effort would slightly increase inflation until 2024, then decrease it afterwards. Other studies have found modest deflation as a result of the bill. So Biden recently expected it would help Democrats' political fortunes because even the parts that are not going to kick in for a little bit will really be, quote, game-changing for ordinary folks. So meanwhile, we see mainstream news talk about how inflation is not a thing, totally not happening. So, or, you know, it's transitory or whatever sort of term they want to use for that. So Vanguard economists, this according to CNBC, warns the worst of UK inflation is yet to come. So they're saying, all right, well, inflation's not happening right now. This totally is not inflation, but we will see inflation. And this is someone from Vanguard, which we know Vanguard, BlackRock, State Street have used this opportunity to buy up a lot of homes, buy up a lot of infrastructure, buy up a lot of properties here in the United States, businesses that were closed due to lockdowns, people who defaulted on their homes, etc., due to lockdowns, being pushed out of their jobs for various different reasons, let's just say over the past couple of years, and inflation pushing people out of their businesses and their homes, and it's been an opportunity. They never let a crisis go to waste, so Vanguard, State Street, BlackRock grabbing up a bunch of properties here in the United States and around the world, and Vanguard basically admitting openly now that future fiscal measures to be calibrated amid high inflation. The senior economist at Vanguard discusses the latest UK inflation figures. So they're saying, yes, we are going to see some inflation. We ain't seen nothing yet, basically, is what they're saying. So they're basically telling people get ready for more and more inflation. Meanwhile, in the UK, UK inflation hits a 10.1% highest in 40 years. Surging food and fuel prices drive the spike. So that's a conservative estimate, saying food prices and fuel has risen 10%. We know it's a lot more than that. So we've seen that here in the United States. What have we seen the past couple of weeks? I'd say gasoline prices dropped, 50 cents? So instead of almost $5 or more than $5 for gasoline around here, it does start to go down. It's $4.10 or $4.15 or $4.20, I think, last time I checked, price of gasoline around here. So mainstream news is claiming that that is proof that Biden's Inflation Reduction Act is working, and people should definitely vote for Democrats with the next round of midterms coming up. So, and then we've got, this is coming out of NBC News, sky high inflation in the United States is driving America's wealthy families to Walmart. Clearly, they're stressed from higher gas prices, higher food prices, and even housing, said the company's CFO. So Walmart has seen major growth, and business is booming in Walmart. Virtually no one is immune to inflation, especially given consumer prices are highest we've seen in the last 40 years. So I would say that that's obviously just the term that the mainstream news wants to address here, inflation. This is basically unprecedented right now. Even America's wealthiest families are feeling the pinch in some ways as they seek refuge from gas price increases and prices from food, etc. That group is now increasingly looking to America's largest value coupon, Walmart. Retail giant's reputation for lower prices is driving more middle and high income shoppers to its shelves, according to the chief financial officer, John David Rainey. Rainey estimated that about 3/4 of Walmart's market share gains in food came from customers with annual household incomes of $100,000 or more. Shoppers are also value hunting in terms of quality and quantity, opting for smaller packages of food and buying items like canned tuna and beans instead of deli meats and beef. They also are increasingly using credit more than debit. So it's kind of fascinating to see the mainstream news say, oh, well, you know, consumer confidence is high because we've got people using credit cards. We've seen credit card spending is up, and that's how they're judging it. They're not looking at people using credit cards to pay for basic necessities as a bad thing. They're seeing it as consumer confidence is high, so they're using credit. Even as the national average gas price falls below $4 a gallon, food prices have continued to soar, with grocery prices rising 13.1% in July, the biggest monthly increase since 1979. So they're comparing it to the late 1970s inflation. But honestly, if you look at the statistics as to what's going on right now with prices of homes, if you look at debt to income ratio, if you look at people's hourly wages compared to, let's say, price for rentals or a price for a mortgage right now, it's way worse than the late 1970s. So I know a lot of people, I wasn't alive during that time, but a lot of people talk about, you know, how there used to be like the gas lines and stuff like that. All that was manufactured, by the way. There weren't any sort of oil shortages, gasoline shortages. It was political theater and mismanagement, of course, which we are seeing right now. And things are much worse right now as far as housing and affordability. And people should be making like 4 times more comparable to the prices right now. Walmart said it continues to experience a glut in inventory in certain categories like apparel and electronics. And that's probably because people just aren't spending their money on that right now. So According to the CEO, Doug McMillon, quote, we are pleased to see more customers choosing Walmart during this inflationary period, and we're working hard to support them as they prioritize their spending. So, of course, this is what happened with the NAFTA here in the United States, the destruction of Main Street USA, small businesses, everyone started shopping at Walmart, always low prices, subsidized and whatnot, and basically just openly telling their workers for decades now to just apply for food stamps because we're not going to pay you. And so the prices that, and the wages that people should be making at Walmart, they are just told to go onto food stamps and they get subsidized that way. So United States basically subsidizing Walmart for many decades at this point and getting rid of the small businesses. And these businesses were deemed, you know, necessary or essential. These were essential businesses that could stay open during the lockdowns, as you remember. Meanwhile, small businesses were closed and harassed and shut down through quote-unquote illegal mandates. And that's how more and more businesses closed during those recent couple of years of lockdowns that we just recently experienced. I know it seems like a lifetime ago already, but we're going to be talking about this for a long time, how so many small businesses and people's lives were ruined through mandates, which closed these small businesses, which were deemed non-essential. And we turn around and, of course, we see Walmart and these other big box stores, which were deemed essential, to they were able to stay open during those lockdowns. So, of course, we've got Bill Gates and Joe Manchin, and they were big supporters of Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. This is according to Bloomberg. So Joe Manchin of West Virginia and the billionaire philanthropist and clean energy investor Bill Gates got on the phone with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer to make sure that the Inflation Reduction Act went through. He wanted to address climate change, and he had stepped down as Microsoft chief executive 2 decades ago to work for and to lobby to make sure that the green technology was really pushed in this Inflation Reduction Act and to make sure that all of that went through. And of course, as I had mentioned during the first hour, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett from Berkshire Hathaway have recently invested in several nuclear energy plants, which I guess is part of the green, their green energy technology plan as well. So just wanted to share that with all of you. And we'll be taking calls top of the second hour, 504-352-4452. Please call in. Thanks.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves.
You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Mm-hmm. You need me. Don't break in the house.
Okay.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Hey, everyone. So thanks for joining me. We've got our call in line open. Love to take some calls. The number is 540-352-4452. So love to take some calls, have some chat. I think I got a call last time I filled in for Dr. Fetzer. So it'd be great to have another call today. So I will be here until the top of the hour if people want to call in, and that'd be great. So I did want to talk about some new information about AI technology. So we're going to get into a little bit of the strange news here. So this has to do with chatbots and AI. So there's a new company called Modulate, which has now gotten a $30 million gift, if you will, to quote detox game voice chat with AI. So Modulator raises $30 million in a Series A voice chat, quote, make voice chat safe for everyone. So this is an opportunity for AI to look into when people are in chats and to make sure that people aren't using offensive words or saying things that they shouldn't, basically. It's interesting learning for the gaming industry. So they're starting off with this, running it in the gaming industry with online gaming. Modulate has raised $30 million to build out its AI product called ToxMod, which scans voice chat using machine learning to find, quote, toxic players in online games. I guess they're just determining anyone who could be offensive, perhaps. ToxMod uses artificial intelligence to highlight problems that human moderators should pay attention to as players chat with each other in online games. It's a problem that will only get worse with the metaverse, the universe of virtual worlds that are all interconnected, like in novels such as Snow Crash and Ready Player One. So you see a lot of that predictive programming. I believe Ready Player One was a Steven Spielberg movie, and I attempted to watch it. It was like this teenager that lived in like a dystopian trailer park, like where all these like trailers were stacked on top of each other because apparently there's like no available land. Everyone's just living in these slums in the future, in our dystopian future, which they are trying to create for us. And this boy basically lives online in the metaverse and is a superhero in the metaverse. That sort of thing is what the predictive programming, like I said, I think it's a Steven Spielberg movie that came out a few years ago. The company raised the rounds thanks to large customers like The Rec Room and PokerStars VR, relying on it to help their community managers find the biggest, quote, toxicity problems that they can start to monitor voice chat in real time using AI. This is a problem that everyone in the industry has desperately needed to solve, according to Mike Papa, CEO of Modulate, in an interview with Games Beat. This is a large-scale market need, and we're waiting to prove that we've actually built the products to satisfy this. So I'm wondering if it's people who are actually playing these games are demanding AI modulation, or if there's something else or someone else who is demanding that AI start to monitor chats online. So we have a caller, Brian, from Missouri. Hey, Brian.
Hello. How are you doing, Holly?
Good. I'm doing well, anyway, Brian.
Yeah, when you start talking about metaverse and AI, there's a lot about this stuff I understand that people just have no understanding of whatsoever. So, first of all, when you talk about that Build Back Better, that they had to change the name, that's actually a victory for the light, because that 666 that you hear about, and no one knows where that comes from. I bet you don't know where that comes from, okay? The 666 thing. Do you have any idea?
Well, I had heard, I mean, it's a reference in the New Testament, right? 666, people like colloquially say it's the number of the beast. I think it had to go with, do with Nero in the minting system.
No, nothing. It's totally different from that. What it is, if you look through the Hubble space craft, okay, the telescope, the Hubble, and you're looking at a new world being created, okay? They've always got stars, you know, and they show them. When you're looking at it, it looks like three sixes superimposed one on the other, okay? And you can really see it. If you bring up stars, it's like three sixes all superimposed at different positions. And divine energy spins, okay? Dark energy, like that metaverse, it's linear. It forms squares. And so what they do is they take that divine energy, that 666 that's spinning, and they lay it out on a linear plane, and then they own it. You see what they're doing? And then they'll do their dark magic concerning that 666 for things in this world. Well, when it couldn't be named 666, that was kind of a victory for for the light. And you see, they turn everything upside down. If you look at the LGBT flag, okay, it's the colors of the rainbow. Well, what that actually is, that's the chakras of Gaia. When you look at a rainbow, you're looking at Gaia's chakras. Are you familiar with your chakra system at all? Do you know anything about that?
Yes, but I haven't heard of it in this context. This is fascinating. No, thank you.
So, you know, your first chakra is red. It goes red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo blue, and then violet. Well, theirs, it's red on top, so they've turned it upside down, and then they own it. They take something good, and then they screw it up. Or if you look at the swastika, okay, you've seen the swastika in ancient India, okay? It's just, you know the symbol, and you can find it in ancient India. And what it is, it's a symbol of higher consciousness. Well, when the dark take it over, they make it cockeyed. You notice how the swastika in World War II, it wasn't, the base wasn't flat to the ground. It was slightly cockeyed. Okay, so that's an indication to you that the dark had taken it over. And originally, the Nazi stuff and Hitler was really good, but that's how they work, is they control the press. So over time, they get in there and they take it over and make it something really bad. So you look at the Nazis today with all that in Ukraine, you know, it's really bad stuff, but originally it was good, just like the Democrat Party was originally good. And now you look at the Democrat Party and it's absolutely horrendous. So, and the metaverse thing, it's like the Indians were divine, okay? Merlin existed, he was divine, he had a staff. And I laugh on TV, they'll show Merlin and his staff is straight up and down. He couldn't use that staff like that. The staff that Merlin used, had a bow in it, kind of like the crankshaft on your car, so he could spin it. And then when he would bring energy down, he would spin it. That's how the divine works. Now, the dark, they make everything linear. So when you look at the metaverse, you'll see all these squares. And that's your indicator that you're dealing with darkness. Anything linear. So anyway, I'm going on too long.
No, I think those are great comments, Brian. You, you know, jogged my memory on a lot of things. I think you're absolutely right when you're talking about linear. So people talk about time as a measure of control, and in some ways a construct. I mean, we live within the confines of time, and of course we see, like you said, when things are placed linear, we are placed within, you know, smaller and smaller units of time. And then when you're talking about like the 666, so like a toroidal field is kind of what I'm thinking of, like you said, something spinning versus something that's flat and linear. And I wonder, have you heard of the CERN technology at all?
Yeah, I'm familiar with CERN. It's all bad, okay?
Yeah.
So what they're doing is bad. And so there are divine forces working on it. But yeah, it's not good what they do at CERN. So anyway.
I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, the more that just normal people like you and I talk about this, the less I think of power that ultimately they can have in control, because people who are ignorant to this really can't fathom, you know, the evil, right? I'm not saying these people are geniuses, but they're definitely like conniving, and they're going to try to do whatever they can to control people.
Well, one thing that they've really screwed things up in our lifetime is it goes to Adolf Hitler, okay? If you really study Hitler, what you'll find is that his personal bodyguard and chauffeur, you can look him up on the internet, his name was Emil Maurice, okay? And he dated Hitler's niece, Gelly Rabal, and Emil Maurice was Jewish, all right? So ask yourself, if Hitler hated Jews, why would he employ a bodyguard who carries the gun and he doesn't? You know, what would happen if his family, Emil Maurice's family, was put in a gas chamber one day and he came to work and said, you know, Hitler, I've got my gun that I used to protect you, and I'm not real happy that you put my family, my Jewish family, in the gas chamber last night, so I think I'm going to take this gun and shoot you. You see, it doesn't make sense, okay? The other thing that doesn't make sense about with Hitler is the founder of the Nazi Party, their guru, their godfather, was a Jew named Alfred Rosenberg from, I think it was Latvia, it was one of those three Baltic countries. Okay, and there was a investigative journalist from Hungary that went and, you know, investigated that family back then and found out they were totally Jewish. Rosenberg is a Jewish name. That's a Khazarian name meaning mayor. Rosen means leader. Berg means city in the Khazarian language. Rosenberg, every Rosenberg I've ever met has been Jewish. So the founder of Nazism was Jewish, and he had a book named Myth of the 20th Century. And if you pick that book up, you can order it on Amazon and read it. The hair on the back of your neck is going to stand up because it's everything going on today. Okay. And why was he killed at Nuremberg? He didn't do anything. The same with Rudolf Hess. He wasn't, you know, he was imprisoned before the war even started out. They just want to hide these things. The other thing about that time is we all hear about how terrible Auschwitz-Birkenau was. Oh, all these people died there. The owner of Auschwitz-Birkenau, which was on Veterans Today, was the Banco Palenzuela family, okay? They moved to Warburg, Germany, and changed their names to Warburgs, and they were one of the top Jewish families with the Rothschilds and all them. They owned it. Well, if it was so bad in Auschwitz, why didn't the Jews go to their Jewish leader, Warburg, and say, gee, we're getting gassed here, murdered. Can you please shut it down? Okay. So the reason I bring these things up, what they did with Hitler because of who he was. He was I don't even know if I should tell you who he was, but they knew what he was doing. Those camps, he was locking up Freemasons. You can even find information on that, on Henry McCow, if you punch in Bernard Fay, F-E-Y, and he talks about them rounding up Freemasons in France, and then they put them in work camps because they were so tremendously horrendous, you know, what they were finding that the Freemasons were doing. So that's what was going on. And in order to make him look bad behind Hitler's back, they were doing all the evil stuff, okay? Because they could not have out there who Hitler really was. They knew who he was, and they just made him look really bad. So.
Well, thanks, Brian. Thanks for your call. And
okay.
Thanks for your all of your interesting comments today. So thanks for calling in.
Okay. Well, thank you, Holly. Bye.
You have a good day. Yeah. All right. We've got the lines open, 540-352-4452. And so I usually look at a lot of this, like the geopolitics and global history, and particularly the world wars, which, you know, we talk about World War One and World War Two, but there's been so many quote unquote world wars at this point, where it's ultimately about population reduction. And we're seeing this right now. We're basically living in a wartime economy. People don't want to talk about it. I don't think they can really get into a hot war. I mean, these things take decades before people can be basically pounded into compliance into a world war. And they just don't have the popular support for something like that, first and foremost. They have to build up an enemy for decades. They have to make people desperate. It usually has to be through these inflationary cycles. The United States is being called Wimerica for multiple reasons right now, because you see the parallels that we see in the United States and what happened in Germany with inflation after the Treaty of Versailles and after the First World War. So United States, U.S. dollar is just being inflated out of control right now, which leads to all kinds of interpersonal and family problems and depression. And obviously from there, they can push civil war. They can push, you know, generational conflict. They can get people to do whatever they can, basically through economic extortion that we're seeing. And then all of the bizarre sort of social programs that come out of the inflationary period and what we saw in Weimar Germany as one example. But we see these cycles all the time. We saw this before the French Revolution, how the people were inflated basically to death. We're seeing this in Sri Lanka right now, where the inflation is just causing a revolution. And I've done videos about this, talking about inflation in Sri Lanka and basically the IMF central bank saying that these countries need to pay off their debts. So we saw this with recommend the book, The Shock Doctrine, where people have suggested to me Confessions of an Economic Hitman. I actually have not read that book yet, which really feel like I should, because people constantly recommend it to me. But you see these cycles where these central banks lend money. They have these loans to these quote-unquote developing nations, and they say, hey, we're going to lend you all this money so that you can build your infrastructure, you can put in roads, you can put in water treatment facilities, you can put in water sanitation, etc., for your people. And then from there, after a few years, they raise the interest rates, things go absolutely nuts, the projects don't get built, and then the banks demand that people pay off those debts. They continue to raise the taxes on the individuals, and the people are thrust into poverty. There's inflation, and then people blame the politicians, which we're seeing in Sri Lanka, which either by hook or by crook were put into signing up for these inflationary loans, these IMF loans through the central banks with their government. So, and let's say a president or someone in power does not want to take these loans, and they might even ask these banks for their gold back, which we've seen several countries demand that over the past couple of years. We saw that in France under De Gaulle is one example. We saw that in Libya with Gaddafi asking about their gold back. There have been several countries recently, I think Maduro in Venezuela has been asking. They've been in court with the Bank of England trying to figure out where their gold went, and that has been stuck in UK court for some reason. The Venezuelan gold is under UK control under the Bank of England. And I don't think people understand that if you look at the context of the world wars, that's basically all it is as well. It starts off with decades of economic extortion of the people, and ultimately you either have a president or a government which will either try to stand up to it, and then you'll have a coup, a color revolution, etc., which we are seeing in Sri Lanka as example. So I believe it was maybe in January, I know it was earlier this year, Sri Lankan government said, hey, I think we're going to default on our debt to the IMF and to the central banks. And they made that declaration. And I said, well, they're either going to stand up and other countries are going to say, hey, we're going to default too, or there's going to be a color revolution. And guess what's going on right now in Sri Lanka? The new government's being installed, who pinky swears that they are going to start repaying back those loans at interest, no matter what it takes, and how much inflation there is, and how much assets need to be seized. So that's another thing they do. We'll say we saw this in Greece, under like the 2008 crash, where they were like, oh, you guys need to privatize and sell the Parthenon. They were literally trying to steal the Parthenon from the people of Greece and privatize it in order to pay off some of their quote unquote debt. So I'm taking calls right now, 540-352-4452. If people want to call in right now, we still have little bit more than a half hour right now. People want to call in to our show today. So I was talking about the metaverse earlier, and talking about a few interesting articles that I saw regarding AI technology and how this ties in with like the Build Back Better and everything like that that we're seeing. The Inflation Reduction Act, the fourth industrial revolution, if you will. So AI modules to monitor people is talking in real time as well. We've got 3 minutes to the break here. So I did want to talk about an article that I saw. This is according to Scientific American. We're going to take some more calls after the break. If you guys want to call in, 540-352-4452. Quote, AI can now help indigenous people protect biodiversity. So it's definitely a loaded title here. The loss of wild species has reached a crisis level. Artificial intelligence can help, but only if indigenous partners have secure land rights. So the United Nations latest biodiversity reports that over 1 million species are headed for extinction, including 1,000 wild mammal species and 450 species of sharks and rays. Massive human consequences. UN's Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services urges governments and NGOs to secure land rights for indigenous peoples who have been proactively protecting wild species with local and regional monitoring networks. So they want to adopt AI intelligence called deep learning neural networks enabled to improve its performance about being programmed, revolutionizing the analysis of sound data from at-risk ecosystems. So they want to use something called acoustic monitoring, often complementing visual monitoring and sometimes replacing it as conservation with restricted access. Governments and NGOs need to work hard to make a tool available for rapid response teams using deep learning neural networks. So we've got 1 minute till our break here. So they're talking about how they want to implement neural networks and deep learning technology on these biodiversity land masses in order to determine if illegal logging and mining will take place. The technology could hear the sounds of chainsaws or drills, send alerts to action-ready patrols on the ground. Indigenous communities with access to the AI deep learning technology will be able to respond instantly, and it could be part of this new technology, part of the AI-based indigenous conservation projects undertaken by Cornell University, has co-developed with coral gardeners from French Polynesia. The indigenous group cultivates heat-resistant super corals and transplants them into damaged parts of the reef. I wonder if these are like GMO-patented corals. Cornell provides the software. I will get into more of this as we talk about deep learning saving biodiversity.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it, that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes, that Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Hey everyone, I am back. My name is Holly Seelger from the YouTube and BitChute channel Zoan Politikon. I'm filling in for Dr. James Fetzer today. And I was just talking about how Scientific American magazine was talking about AI neural-based learning programs in order to save and preserve biodiversity across the planet. The National Science Foundation is creating an AI Institute for Climate and Coastal Oceanography in order to combat the reduction in the number of plant and animal species across the globe using AI technology. So I think it's kind of funny that once again, we've got another opportunity to observe the ordo ab chao in real time as these individuals are paramount in destruction of the natural habitat, and then they can turn around and use AI, a false technology, and a false, trying to create these AI learning into actual beings, if you will, while they are destroying the biodiversity of the planet and then claiming that they've got the answer to all of it. So just some global insanity that we're seeing. So speaking of insanity, I wanted to talk about some more AI and crazy science tech that just came out today. Researchers have created a wearable, stretchable computing chip that mimics the workings of the human brain. New wearable technology. So you might remember that like a few years ago, like the Google Glasses and everything that came out, the wearable and even injectable technology, which I'm sure people have probably become quite aware of over the past couple of years. Particularly if you listen to this Revolution Radio, you're probably pretty aware and probably just preaching to the choir when it comes to that topic. But I am taking calls this hour on this topic or any topic you would like, I suppose. 540-352-4452. If you would feel like calling in and speaking to me or speaking to the audience, or if you've got comments or questions or whatever you would like to discuss today. So much news out there. So a new wearable technology skin-like computer chip can analyze health data and brain mimicking AI. So of course they're using the excuse of health data tracking. So that's how it always starts, right? So it's going to be, you know, for your health, or do this for your health, or we're doing this because we really care about you. We want you to wear this chip 24/7, and we can tell when you're going to have a heart attack or an anxiety attack because of the technology and the situation, the economic structure that we've put for you. And, you know, you're stressed out. Gee, it sounds like you might need some medication, or we've got a pill for that. We've got a swallowable brain chip pill, and it will deliver the medication that you need so that you no longer have an existential crisis over the manufactured economic crisis. A team of U.S. researchers have developed a flexible, stretchable computing chip that processes information by mimicking the human brain. The device, described in the journal Matter, aims to change the way health data is processed. Quote, this is the work we've bridged by creating wearable technology with artificial intelligence and machine learning to create a powerful device which can analyze health data right on our own bodies, said Xizhong Wang, a materials scientist and assistant professor of molecular engineering at the University of Chicago. An in-depth profile of your health requires a visit to a hospital or a clinic, but in the near future, people's health could be tracked continuously by wearable electronics that can detect diseases even before symptoms appear. I will also just put in my own piece of information. It could be wearable or perhaps even injectable. Wang's team designed a chip that could collect data from multiple biosensors and draw conclusions about a person's health using cutting-edge machine learning approaches. Importantly, they want it to be wearable on the body and integrate seamlessly with skin. Quote, it's a smart watch and there's always a gap. We wanted something that can achieve intimate contact and accommodate the movement of skin rather than working like a typical computer. The chip, which is called a neuromorphic computing chip, functions like a human brain in that it is able to store and analyze data in an integrated way. So if you want to call in, we've got the number once again, 540-352-4452. To test the utility of their new device, Wang's group used it to analyze an electrocardiogram and ECG data representing the electrical activity of the human heart. So interestingly enough, there seems to be a lot of new technology out there. I don't know if it was which doctor it was, but there was someone, maybe it was Dr. Tenpenny, but someone a couple years ago had told people that there are literally millions of new patents out there for like wearable technology and AI technology and patents for new drugs and lots of new medical equipment and devices and prescriptions, which were all kind of waiting in the wings for people to start to need them. And then they would basically release all of these new types of devices and prescription drugs, etc., medical technology. So this could be an example of it. So using these electronic ECGs with the electrochemical transistors of these basically biosensors that they want to start to stick onto people's bodies in order to monitor your health at all times in real time, an automatic feedback loop using this technology, using a stretchy wearable technology, electronic wearable biosensor for your health to get real time health tracking, could track your blood pressure. We're seeing a lot of people, interestingly enough, who have heart problems all of a sudden. So this could be a way for these individuals to be tracked and monitored with their hearts in real time. There's also a company I mentioned recently. I'm wondering if the CHIPS Act has something to do with this as well. Biden signed in the CHIPS Act, the National Institute of Health, using the new CHIPS Act as well. There's also something called the Synchron Implant, brain implant, which I will get into as well. CHIPS and Science is just the start. CHIPS and the Science Act is the result of something exciting on Capitol Hill. This is according to the SantaMariaTimes.com. A productive discussion on the next generation of American research that prioritizes investment in science, as well as a $54 billion U.S. dollar semiconductor innovation. They're going to be putting a lot of this into health acts as well, and health research and chips and potential for these new chip technology within the health sector as well. So I wanted to mention the Synchron brain implant to computer interface. So kind of similar to Elon Musk and his Neuralink program, innovating the new Synchron implants mind reading device as a use first patient in a paralysis trial. So this just came out recently as well. First participant at the Mount Sinai West Hospital in New York City, Synchron Stentrode system, which is a stent that they implanted into someone with paralysis in order to monitor and to read someone's brain, they claim, a brain-computer interface. Synchron's BCI technology doesn't require open brain surgery or any drilling into the skull. Instead, it can be put into place into a minimally invasive surgery that takes about 2 hours. Synchron device now approved by the FDA, part of the National Institutes of Health Neural Interface Program, which I'm wondering if the new CHIPS Act will be putting a lot of technology into, like, the Neuralace and the Neural Interface Programs with their semiconductor chips. Part of the Stentrode system is a permanently implanted stent-like device. It's inserted through a jugular vein to reach the motor cortex of the brain, where it can pick up neurological signals denoting an individual's intended actions in real time. Then they can translate the thoughts implanted into the user's chest and then translates them into real time into clicks and keystrokes on a computer or a mobile device, with the addition of an eye tracking device that is used to control the movements of the computer cursor. So it allows people with severe paralysis to send text and emails, access online banking, which is, of course, very important, and online shopping services, complete telehealth visits, and more, using only their thoughts to control the tech, therefore returning some independence to their lives. So they're claiming this is for people with paralysis, but I'm assuming this will probably be extended to just anyone who wants the comfort and convenience of doing online banking and shopping using their mobile device and a Stentrode injected directly into your chest. So there's some more Neuralace and neurotechnology as well. Artificial intelligence model finds potential drug molecules as well. So drugs can be used. Geometric deep learning model is faster and more accurate than state-of-the-art computational models, reducing the chances and costs of drug trial failures. So instead of actually trying the doing drug trials on actual individuals, they can use AI learning models and in real time try to figure out how it could potentially impact an individual. This is according to MIT.edu, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. So we are taking phone calls here for the next 15 minutes or so. If someone wants to call in, our number is 540-352-4452. So I wanted to talk about some interesting, strange news of the week, the technology news that I've seen. So I did want to talk about graphene. So if you are a listener of Revolution Radio, you've probably become keenly aware of the potential uses and applications of graphene over the past couple of years, let's just say. But there are many articles out there which talk about graphene oxide and graphene technology. And this is according to phys.org, phys.org, news, graphene as the philosopher's stone, turning waste into gold. So here's another potential use of graphene. Technology, high efficiency extraction of trace amounts of gold, a schematic of the extraction process using the new graphene technology. Throughout history, alchemists believe in the existence of the philosopher's stone, a substance that could turn cheap substances into precious gold. Now, scientists from the University of Manchester, the Tsinghua University in China, and the Chinese Academy of Sciences have shown that graphene can be a kind of philosopher's stone, allowing gold extraction from waste containing only trace amounts of gold down to 0.001%. This new seemingly magical application of graphene works straightforwardly. Add graphene to a solution containing traces of gold, and after a few minutes, pure gold appears on graphene sheets with no other chemicals or energy input involved. After this, you can extract pure gold by simply burning the graphene off. Published by Nature Communications Journal shows that 1 gram of graphene can be sufficient for extracting nearly 2 grams of gold. As graphene costs less than 10 cents a gram, this can be very profitable, with gold prices at about $70 a gram. Dr. Yang Su from Tsinghua University, who led the research effort, said, quote, "This apparent magic is essentially a simple electrochemical process. Unique interactions between graphene and gold ions drive the process and also yield exceptional selectivity. Only gold is extracted with no other ions or salts. Gold is used in many industries, including consumer electronics, mobile phones, laptops, etc. And when the products are eventually discarded, little of the electronic waste is recycled. Graphene-based process, with its high extraction capacity and high selectivity, can reclaim close to 100% of gold from electronic waste." So pretty interesting how gold is attracted to graphene. Quote, "Not only are our findings promising for making this part of the economy more sustainable, but also emphasize how different anatomically thin materials like graphene can be from their parents' well-known bulk materials. Graphite, for example, is worthless for extracting gold, while graphene almost makes it like a philosopher's stone." So lots of articles out there if people want to take a look at the graphene industry and all the different potential uses and how it attracts gold. Very fascinating article on that as well. And then one more article I just wanted to share with people today. If we have no more callers, the number is 540-352-4452. Electrical body stimulation and sound shows promising results in relieving chronic pain. So this is kind of trying to leave this a little bit on a positive note for people, because I kind of hate doing a show and ending on a negative note all the time. It's just, right, we don't need to live in a depressing world. I think with all the information that's out there, we basically need to curate it and learn from it and do what we can to improve ourselves and make the world better for ourselves and others. And I think that this type of information, it's been around for a long time. Of course, Tesla said that we need to start understanding the world in context of frequency and vibration. And so much information is out there about the different frequency technologies out there, which are detrimental to human health. But we also need to understand that there are many, many frequencies and technologies out there which are beneficial to human health, and accessing those types of technologies. I personally am not offering any sort of medical or financial or spiritual advice or anything like that. I have become interested in something called the Violet Wand, which was technology which was developed by Tesla. And it is still used in, I believe, aestheticians use it. They can still use it, the violet ray or violet wand technology. and could be used. Some people claim health benefits. I'm not saying that there are health benefits to it. I'm just saying that it used to be before the 1950s when the FDA cracked down on it. There was wide use and application of violet ray or violet one technology as a frequency. And you can have neon bulbs on it, or like I said, the violet ray bulbs hooked up to the technology to be used as health technology. And people might have heard of the individual Edgar Cayce, who is known as the sleeping prophet in the first half of the 20th century, also claimed that these types of frequency technologies could be beneficial for people in pain, etc. And I think that this article offers a glimpse into this type of technology. A team from the University of Minnesota Twin Cities has developed a technique that could help people with chronic and neurological conditions find pain relief. The process involves electrical stimulation of the body combined with sound waves activating a part of the brain that regulates pain. So I know that there's a lot of videos and music online. I think, what is it, the different Hertz technology that people claim can help people with healing, etc. Research used electrical body stimulation in animal models and showed promising results. They could be used for humans in future trials. Chronic pain is a huge issue for a lot of people, and for most is not sufficiently treatable. I think I read a statistic recently that a third of Americans are using some sort of prescription or over-the-counter pain medication at any given time here in the United States. That's probably a conservative estimate. So most people in the United States, or at least a third of people in the United States, are exhibiting or under some sort of chronic pain issue right now. So, of course, the opiate epidemic, quote-unquote epidemic, comes to mind as well. People getting prescribed opiate medications and then having to deal from the fallout of that. To conduct the experiment, researchers used guinea pigs and played broadband sound while electrically stimulating different parts of the body. They found that this type of stimulation activated the brain's soma to sensory complex cortex, rather, which is the area responsible for processing feelings of touch, temperature, and pain. Although they use needle stimulation to do their experiments, they also expressed that same thing could be done using an electrical stimulation device, which could be bought at certain stores and pharmacies. They're hoping that a treatment for chronic pain could be used through these electromagnetic as well, multimodal stimulation approaches for treating neurological conditions as well. The somatosensory cortex, they said music therapy could also be used as a great tool that researchers are confident could make a significant difference. This field has a large ways to go, since it is indeed an untraditional development to use sound as a means to treat pain. I do believe there are people called music therapists or sound therapists that do help people who claim that they're suffering from chronic pain. So I don't really think that this is new information by any means. I think people have talked about how harp music can improve people's pain, etc., all of that, and then like the different frequencies, like I said, like the different gigahertz healing technology and frequencies, as well as I had mentioned with the electro stimulation, such as the Tesla technology. He had been, of course, people always know about Tesla through his death ray technology, but he also developed a lot of healing modalities through the different frequencies, and he was able to exhibit these different frequencies, which could either cause pain or pleasure or healing or work with the body. So that opens up a whole other can of worms as far as the technologies, the radio frequencies out there, and why the AC and DC models were kind of pushed between Edison and Westinghouse and Tesla, the battle over that, and then the battle over the different radio frequencies. And then right now, I've done videos recently talking about how the 3G technology, third generation technology, is being slowly shut down. So I actually got a letter recently from my phone company saying that they are phasing out the third generation technology here locally. and they're no longer going to operate the 3G towers around here, so people need to update to the 4G and higher. And I've even had people talk about recently the 6G technology, which just a few years ago was deemed a conspiracy theory, but that's the satellite technology, I guess, that is starting to be available for people to purchase at this point as well, hooked up with like the solar panels, etc. So lots of information I think we're going to see over the next few years. We're going to see so much information come out with this fourth industrial revolution about the types of technologies that are available. And of course, the powers that be are going to want to control all of this and use it through like this UN green agenda and limit the amount of technology that is available to people and make it so that it's unaffordable to people. Or your electric vehicle, I think, is a perfect example of this. And like the electric battery, I mean, there's just so much real world application that's out there. And there's a great documentary called Who Killed the Electric Car, which kind of touches on this a little bit, the potential of the electric batteries that have actually, these electric vehicles have been around, I believe, since the 1920s. And we used to have the electric streetcars. The electric streetcar industry was basically destroyed after World War II to bring in, you know, the modern cars that we see today. And then now they're bringing in the electric vehicles with the battery systems, which are completely subpar. We know that they are just not effective at all, and probably just there to limit people's availability and access to travel moving forward, because these batteries constantly need to be charged. I saw an article where this liberal person bought an electric vehicle and wanted to use it to like drive across country. And they realized like right away how this was just absolutely not effective and not useful at all. And all that time charging expanded their trip and how expensive it was to try to do it. And I know people might say, oh, well, it'll get less expensive as things you know, progress and become more and more readily available. I don't think so. I think they're going to try to push it as long as they can, where they're going to market this inefficient technology in order to limit people's access to travel. That would be kind of like my belief that they're trying to push that forward with like the carbon credits and whatnot. Like, you know, you can't travel this much, or you can't fly in a plane this often because of, you know, you've gone over your carbon credit limit. So thanks so much for joining me today. I was kind of all over the place, but so happy to follow up and be able to do fill in for Dr. James Fetzer. So he'll be back soon. Thanks, everyone.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and...